The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
Fred Zinke unveils his strategic component to adjusting to the lack of offense in baseball. Is Marcus Semien a star? What do you do about Marcus Semien? And the whole world is day-to-day. All that and more on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Jeff Erickson here with Fred Zinke, who is going to unveil yet another master secret of the universe that he's been doing all podcast season long. We appreciate him for that. Fred, how's it going? Are you a happy, happy Leafs fan right now?
Very happy. I had to miss some of the game last night while taking one of my kids to hockey, but I saw the third period, which was very exciting. And it doesn't matter if I saw it, the result was good. But after last year with the Canadiens and the failures against Montreal last year, I'm not taking anything for granted at this point.
So Montreal had that run last year, and then they're like dead last this year. What happened?
Yeah, that run ended, and some people listening to this will be like, who are they talking about? But that run ended Shea Weber's career, who was their best player. And yeah. I think it might have ended Carey Price's career. I think Price may not. I don't know if I think I could see Price retiring this summer. He basically didn't play this season. Shea Weber is going to never play again. Like, those two guys just completely sacrificed their bodies to get through the playoffs last year and like basically will that team that wasn't very good all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. So I actually felt bad for their GM, because if you would have told him when they were in the Stanley Cup Finals last year — he got fired early this season — if you would have told him when they were in the finals last year that he would get fired and his two best players would not play another game before they fired him, like, that was I thought that was a tough one this season.
Yep. That is. And you see that all the time, but coach takes an underachieving team very far, but maybe not all the way. But you even saw it like in soccer. Like, remember Leicester City, Claudio Ranieri, he took them the title. The biggest against all odds Premier League title. And then 2 years later, he was fired. I mean, it happens, but still, it's wild to happen that short amount of time. But this is a baseball podcast, so as much as I am watching a lot of hockey and excited, I got two TVs on. I got the Grid Channel on one, and I got Rangers Penguins on the other. So, let's focus on the baseball side of things. And again, more talk about the run scoring is down. Yesterday was hideous. I think the highest scoring game was 9 runs. We had a 1-0 game, a 3-0 game, a 2-1 game. It's really frustrating watching these games if you're a connoisseur of offense. It's one thing when Max Scherzer is dealing. It's another when it's every pitcher is dealing. It's just nobody's special.
So this is something I've been thinking about. So last week we talked about how you would maybe approach this as far as trading goes. Would you ship out some pitchers? You know, because I don't really care to talk about as far as drafting goes. I know some people might draft like late season leagues, but we're far from Memorial Day leagues. But we're mostly past people drafting. We talked last week about trading, and would you trade successful pitchers for successful hitters, thinking that you can backfill the pitching that you're going to lose, but you can't backfill the hitting right now because hardly anyone is successfully hitting.
Unless you're like Fred Zinke and you picked up Taylor Ward and you're feeling pretty darn smart about yourself right about now. Not that you're bragging about it, but. That was an expert pickup.
I have made a lot of mistakes so far this season, but that one has gone quite well so far. So, and yeah. I'm still calling the jury out on Stephen Kwan because I raved about him. He still has no homers, no steals, but he did miss basically a week. His batting mm-hmm. average is still really high. So he's still getting on base a lot. So I'm saying the jury's still out on him. And I guess the jury's still out on Ward in a way. But what I've been starting to think about this week, and I'm interested in your opinion on this. So there's been a lot of backlash about, and I don't just mean like in fantasy baseball. Like I feel like there's been a lot of backlash in actual baseball circles about the lack of offense and people talking about the games being boring. And like you said, like there's a difference between a Corbin Burns, Max Scherzer pitcher duel and just every game, every night, every pitcher's registering, you know, five plus innings with two runs or less, or almost every pitcher.
Jake Odorizzi last night against the Mariners. This is a perfect example of that.
Yes, exactly. Every pitcher except Charlie Morton keeps registering quality starts. And I say that because he had they're not disastrous outings, but in this landscape, they're hurting you
right.
this afternoon. Do you think that Major League Baseball is going to slide a more lively ball into the game at some point this season?
So I don't know because, you know, Major League Baseball itself has been pretty silent on the issue. Mm-hmm. There was some talk about how in the past how they were trying to curtail home runs after 2019, but they went too far. You know, correct me if I'm wrong. If someone else has seen it, let me know. But I've heard no comments from Major League Baseball as an organization talking about the ball. You know, they may not recognize this as a problem. It might not even be nefarious. They're trying to speed up the game. One way to speed up a game is having fewer pitching changes, having, you know, lower scoring. You know, slugfests take longer. And all this talk about the game being too slow, well, that's one thing. Hey, it's not three true outcomes anymore. It's two true outcomes.
It definitely is that. I don't trust Major League Baseball enough that if they did change the ball, that they would say anything to us. I think it would be the kind of
thing
that we figure out partway through the season. So anyways, this got me thinking on the possibility that they change the ball. Should your plan this time of year, this year, be to absolutely maximize your innings pitched, even with some fairly questionable pitchers, because like you said, like Jake Odorizzi's pitching well, why are you shying away from getting just as many innings possible right now so that you have the option, if the ball does become more lively in the summer, to stream middle relievers, have fewer innings pitched, but have already banked, right? Like mathematically, if you already bank solid ratios in the first half of the season with this dead ball, and like forget strikeouts, forget wins, like whatever. But if you can bank ratios by just compiling a lot of innings, could you then throw less innings in the second half? You know what I mean? I
know what you mean
on the possibility. And if there's no signs that the ball gets more lively in the summer, then you could keep maxing out your innings all season. But if we do start to see scoring go up at some point, I don't know. I just don't trust me. That Major League Baseball has clearly shown that they're willing to doctor the ball to suit their own needs.
Yep.
Over and over again. So
we're just trying to guess what the MLB's right. needs are.
So it's never, so the ball can't possibly become more dead. Like it can't be. Like we'd have 0-0 games at that point. I feel like, so like there's no way they're going to make the ball more dead. They could only either leave it or make it more lively.
Yeah, that's true. I think it's not a bad instinct to get while the getting's good. I think the practical application of that means is you're, any questionable closer, any non-closing reliever you bench, and you pick up these shakier starters, the guys that we were talking about earlier about not using, and in lieu of the, you know, the Seth Lugos of the world, you know, use Chad Green. Don't use this shaky starting pitcher that goes four innings. Now we're using that shaky starting pitcher because A, he's stretched out longer, and B, he's getting better results. I can see that.
Yeah, that it's something that I was kind of thinking about earlier this week. Another one was Tyler Wells last night. I was telling people in DFS to go against him, but I forgot that every pitcher is successful. So I don't know who we should go against anymore. But yeah. Tyler Wells for the Orioles last night threw five innings, gave up one earned run, four base runners, like Tyler Wells. The game before that, Tyler Wells, 5 innings, 2 earned runs, 3 base runners. Both games only 4 strikeouts. But like these are like he like if you use Tyler Wells the last 2 weeks, you bank 10 innings, 3 runs, just towards your overall ratios at the end of the season. He didn't get a win in either game. I don't know. I'm not saying you go and get Tyler Wells, but there's someone who's probably, without me looking it up, is like 5% or less rostered in NFBC leagues.
Well, look at tonight's starting pitcher for Baltimore. Bruce Zimmerman has a 0.93 ERA. Now, he gave up 4 unearned in his last start against the Yankees. So I kind of look at him with a jaundiced eye a little bit. And actually, sure, to that point, I ran a Minnesota stack against him. How's that working? It's 0-0 in the third right now. So not great, Bob. But I'm trying to be a little creative. I don't know. We'll see if that works out. But another practical implication, you got daily moves leagues like Yahoo Friends and Family, like you and I are in. Maybe we should be streaming more starting pitching now, using up more of our moves instead of going after the closer du jour. Like I've been picking up, I picked up Helsley. I picked up Montero, and I've been trying to steal some saves here and there. I don't know if it's going to work out, but my team kind of sucks in that league, but maybe I should be focusing more on getting more starters and just, you know, streaming, because it's 1400 innings is a hard number to hit anyhow, even with daily moves, because we have a cap on moves too. It's what, 80 moves over the course of the season. So I can't go crazy, but maybe I should be going crazier early and taking advantage of this.
Yeah, that was my thought. And then you at least, you've built in the option of backing off on pitching in the second half of the season if the offense comes alive because the ball becomes more lively. I think that's what it'll take. Like offenses will become a little more alive as the season goes on. They always do. The weather will warm up. The starting pitchers, some of them will start to fall apart and get injured, and the replacements won't be as good. Like that'll all happen. But I'm talking about whether they make the ball more lively, maybe not 2019 lively, but they make it more lively. And there's a major jump in offense at some point. And I mean, we've all been watching games this season where we've seen balls hit that we think that would be a home run with a different baseball. And it makes all the difference in the games, right?
Like, right. And it's not only that. You hear a ball off the bat, you see the hitter react, he thinks he's got in a good ball, and it doesn't even get to the warning track in some cases, or gets to the front edge of the warning track. Some of that is cold weather and wind. I get that will help, but it will be changed later, but a lot of it is the ball. And I don't want to belabor that point, because actually I do belabor the point all the time, but it's really something that we got to account for, and I think it will change, but how much I don't know. And like you said, they won't announce it. There will be no degree of precision. Joe Sheehan wrote a good article too in his newsletter that, you know, the strike zone's a big part of this too. I mean, you see it every game. You see the extra cup. There's a note that went out that said that when they're grading these umpires on balls and strikes, they grade on the curve. Like you miss a pitch by 2 inches outside, that's like a C letter grade for an umpire. So we're all up in arms about Angel Hernandez, but they're grading on the curve and they're like, no, it's just normal miss, not egregious. But you see Mike Trout get rung up on a Dylan Cease pitch that's clearly outside yesterday in his third at bat. And it's Dylan Cease who's got crazy good stuff. How do you compete with that when he's getting those 2 extra inches on each side of the plate? I mean, it's really tough. And that's Mike Trout we're talking about here.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, there's another change. I don't think that's a change baseball will make, where they tell umpires to like tighten up their strike zone a little bit.
Call the strike zone? Yeah. Well, yeah, you also have to prevent catchers from stealing strikes too. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. I don't know if that's an actionable change that they can make in the middle of the season. Like umpires aren't robots. Like they're human. It's going to be hard to get them to change their habits in the middle of the season. I think the big dilemma, and I think you hit on it, is it's comparing these Bruce Zimmerman types, the low end starters, with a good middle reliever that maybe you expect to throw 3 innings. Mm-hmm. You know, like we've said for the last few years often, well, that middle reliever won't hurt your ratios. He'll probably help your ratios. So you take him for the 3 innings, you cross your fingers that he gets a win. He probably won't. Once in a while, you'll get lucky and he does. But you know, we would say that he won't hurt your ratios. He's only going to get you 3 or 4 strikeouts, but he won't hurt your ratios. Well, once we get to the point where we feel like the starting pitcher also won't really hurt your ratios, Now I wonder if the pendulum swings away from the Paul Sewalds of the world and more towards the Bruce Zimmermans. Because my plan of attack going into the season would have been, for example, to use Sewald over a questionable starter. Now I'm debating. If I thought the reliever was going to throw four innings a week in the week, I think I would go with him. If I think he's going to throw three or two, then I wonder if now I should be using the starting pitcher. And the starting pitchers are just going to get more built up. So soon we're going to see more of them throwing. I know third time through the order thing, but you don't get to the third time through the order as quickly if you're not giving up very many hits. So we might start seeing more of them throw 5 2/3 and sometimes six innings.
Yeah. It raises the next question is, can we even adjust on the fly on time? Like in a deeper league, NL labor, NL tout, AL tout, or even 15 team mixed leagues, the player pool is sufficiently picked over that it's hard to adjust your strategy on the fly.
I think you can definitely adjust in 12 team yeah. leagues. Like there's always starters on waivers. So, I think another example. So Clay and Todd always do the Friday podcast where they do a 5-point rating system for two star pitchers. And I often listen to that one, while going running over the weekend. And I typically agree with most of their assessments of the starting pitchers. If you start to slide more, like I wonder if they need to be giving out more twos when they would give a one, more threes when they would give a two, and start being a little more generous to anyone who I get the ones who you don't think will throw five innings. I think that's a different thing because like they're just not going to get a win. If you think the starter is only going to throw three innings or something like that, then they're just not going to get a win. But I wonder if they'll have to get more generous. I don't know. It's something for Todd and Clay to think about if they'll have to get more generous with their ratings. Thinking that, these pitchers aren't going to, like often they'll get to a pitcher and I'll hear them say, I don't really see any optimistic side, any real reason to put that pitcher in your lineup. I'm giving him a zero or I'm giving him a one. And as I'm running, I'll be like, oh yeah, I agree with that. Now I wonder if we should be more open-minded to trying some of these guys.
Yeah. It's not a bad call. Yeah. Not a bad call at all. All right. We're going to talk about some slow starters. We're going to talk about keeps and cuts and trades. Some prospects that I got called up. We'll talk a little Juan Yepez. I know there's a question in the forum about that. Before we do that, though, a quick note from our friends at the Blue Wire Network.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, and we're back. So, Fred, I don't even know if I threw this on the outline for you, but the question from William here is prompting me to bring this up. Juan Yepez is available. The Cardinals just called him up. Do I drop Jose Miranda for him? Jose Miranda just got the call, made his major league debut yesterday, went 0-for-4 in the middle of the lineup again today. And the third big prospect is MJ Melendez getting called up by the Royals. He's making his debut today against the Cardinals as the DH. First of all, we'll answer his question. Yepez versus Miranda, who do you like better?
So I think I'm going to say Miranda. Miranda had better minor league numbers last year, although they both had good minor league numbers last year, but Miranda's were a little better. Right. They're both intriguing. They both have potential. If I could only roster one, I think I'd go with Miranda. Like with Lopez getting brought up, Edmundo Sosa just went on the IL, the COVID IL. So this could just be like a like a 5-day thing or something, and then he's back down. Miranda could be back down any day too, but maybe with Miguel Sano needing
He's out for a while.
Yeah, needing meniscus surgery. I believe to repair a torn meniscus. That at least opens up now. Luis Arias is gonna be their first baseman, which is, I think, the weirdest first baseman I've ever seen. Like, have you ever seen a first baseman with, I mean, we've seen powerless, we've seen 10 homer, 15 homer first baseman. Have you ever seen like a 3-homer first baseman before with his contact skills? But anyways, that opens
like
up
Todd Benzinger, maybe. Except Benzinger actually was taller. I'm trying to think of powerless first baseman. Hal Morris, both of these guys used to play for the Reds, by the way. So
yeah,
of
course, I just pulled up Todd Benzinger. He did have a 17 homer season. That's okay. Never going to happen for
not. Luis Arias. You're right.
But he did have a lot of seasons where he played. He had more power. Arias has got it. He's one of the lightest hitting players. Like, he might be the lightest hitting player in baseball. Anyways, I think there's maybe a little more with Sano gone. Maybe there's a little more opportunity for Miranda to stick on the roster.
Yep. Miranda's playing first, by the way, today, which is interesting. So yeah. Arias is out of the lineup, but that's also a lefty on the mound in Zimmerman, too. So I might have something to do with it there, but it gets Gio Urshela in as well. But I like Miranda, and I like, you know, he was the guy that we were looking at getting the call before the Twins went out and signed Carlos Correa. We thought, okay, well, Urshela could play short. They'll call up Miranda, and that's their left side of the infield. And I'll be excited about Miranda. He's a legit prospect. Yep. Had a big year last year. Now, obviously, we'll see how long he's in there, but this is a pretty good opportunity for him.
Yes. Now, would you take MJ Melendez over either one of them? I think I would.
Although, again, you know, all three of these guys share one thing in that they don't necessarily have a long-term hold on a roster spot. With the Royals, Melendez got the call because Cam Gallagher got hurt, their backup catcher. Now, he's out for a while, too, though. That works in Melendez's favor. Now, will Melendez catch it all, or will he just be the DH? He actually played some third base, I think, in the minors, a little bit of first base, too. Kind of a man without position. We'll see. I mean, I'm looking at the lineup for the Royals today. No Carlos Santana. Ryan O'Hearn is playing, taking a spot and batting cleanup, too. It'll be interesting. No, by the way, William asked, do I drop Gary Sanchez for Melendez? I'm going to say no on that.
That's a tough one. I'm like a kind of a never Gary Sanchez guy now because the batting average is so low. Yeah. So I'm going to say in a 2-catcher league, I guess I stick with Gary Sanchez.
That is a ringing endorsement. Yep.
I guess.
Only one homer, though. Yeah, I get it.
If you drop Sanchez for Melendez, you're not really dropping Sanchez for Melendez. You're dropping Sanchez now to for the wild card of Melendez or streaming the spot. Because if it's 2-catcher league, you're not going to probably get Sanchez back. So you're going for it with Melendez and you're deciding that you're comfortable streaming like the Tucker Barnharts of the world if Melendez doesn't work out. I'm at the point where I might be ready to do that. But again, I have no Sanchez. I didn't want someone with such a low batting average every year. I know there's a ton of guys with low batting averages right now, but Gary Sanchez always has low batting average. So
yeah.
I think with Melendez, the reason I would prefer him is just that he's a catcher and the bar for catchers is so low. Although just the way hitting's going, the bar for any useful hitter is getting kind of low, but the bar for catchers is still in 2-catcher leagues, still really low. So I think that's probably why Melendez is so team dependent, right? Like if you have 2 catchers who are solid, forget it. You're right. But you know, and if you don't, if your second catcher is Sanchez, if it's James McCann, something like that, you know, I mean, what I'd love to do is not drop Sanchez. I'd love to drop anyone else and get Melendez and hold Sanchez for 1 week while I look and see how much Melendez plays and then drop Sanchez.
So it's interesting. The league where I got Melendez, I held on to my other catcher. I held on to Ryan Jeffers. Right.
Yep.
Because I really don't know how long they're going to keep him, how much they're going to play him on a regular basis. In fact, it's an NFBC platform. It's the Scarf League. It's one of those like there's a Oakland Bay Area version of it, a Boston area, Great Lakes version, GLARF. We're the Southern California version of that. And they use the NFBC scoring rules. There's an overall component. And that means I can replace him. I can put him in on Friday. So with him not starting yesterday, having him at most two games, I decided to go Jeffers over him. Mm-hmm. But I probably go Melendez on Friday. We'll see what happens. But yeah, really surrounding this whole Melendez, Yepes, and Miranda issue there. But scratched my interest there. You wrote an article on Yahoo talking about Marcus Semien and your concern about him. Off to a terrible start. Really awful exit velocity on his and his hit so far. Tell people more about him.
Yeah, I just looking at him. So this was, you know, as of start of play on Monday, I said that Semien, forget injuries, that Semien's probably the most disappointing draft pick so far this year. I mean, he hasn't homered. His batting average at that time was in the bottom 10. His OPS, I think, was in the bottom 5. You know, he was a top 40 to 50 pick in pretty much every league. So I felt like I said, like outside of someone who's been injured a lot this season, like Jacob deGrom, you could say was the most disappointing pick for anyone who took him before.
Right. That's not fair.
Yeah. Semien is in your lineup killing you so far this season. And so I was trying to look at what's wrong, and the quality of contact is what's wrong. His strikeout rate's similar, his walk rate's similar, his average exit velocity is way down, his barrel rate's way down. StatCast gave him an XBA that's not much better than his batting average. Like, he's just not making quality contact at all. I'm concerned, and the reason I'm concerned is that, like, I was a little skeptical of Semien going into the season, and that's after me watching him play for the Blue Jays last year. I don't know. I think this guy might be a little bit of the poster child for beware the late career year kind of pick. So if we go back and look at him, I know he's like a hardworking guy who really improved as a hitter throughout his career. Or at least that was the story on him, right?
Right.
That we've been told. Okay. So let's look at him. So he had a great year in the happy fun ball year, 892 OPS.
Yeah.
And then obviously last year, I'm actually counting last year as his career because it wasn't a happy fun ball year and he had almost an identical OPS. In every other year of his career, his OPS is 735 or lower. Every other year. So is he this vastly improved hitter, or is he a guy who benefited from happy fun ball like a lot of hitters did, and then totally had with the Blue Jays a year where everything clicked, their offense was insanely good, he was near the top of it, like amazing
got
lineup
to play half the season in minor league ballparks, you know?
Yeah, like just so I wonder if he's the I don't think he's gonna be this bad all year, but I wonder if he's the poster child or just another case of like beware the guy who's like on the wrong side of 30 and has a career year and expect, like, he left Toronto, he went to a ballpark that's not as good, a lineup that's way worse, the pressure of the new contract. My recommendation after diving in on him was don't buy low. Like, and if you have him and you can sell slightly low, I would sell slightly low.
What does that mean?
I'm not giving him away, but, and I didn't say cut him. And I did think about it in like, and I know most people listening who are NFBC people will be like, that's ridiculous. But in Yahoo, who I write for, there are 18 leagues that are head to head with no middle infield spot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is he a top 8 or 10 second baseman or shortstop, right? Like the rest of the way? I don't know.
Yeah. I think that's a valid question. So I'm, one of the cool things about Yahoo is that you can kind of go and do some research on players, including who they've been traded for.
Yeah.
And that to me is pretty wide open. So let's do that with Marcus Semien right now. And we can get an idea of what sort of deals, and you can do one for ones, multi-players. You can sort a lot of different ways. So Marcus Semien today, let's take a look at some of his trades. Not too many one for ones. Oh, here's an interesting one. There's a straight up trade my problem for your problem for Trevor Story, who also hasn't homered this year. And Paul chimes in there, tied for most disappointing.
He would yes. Trevor Story would be down there. And he also has he didn't play great last year. And he's leaving Coors Field. So Trevor Story,
at least he went to Boston. You would think that Boston would be a good landing spot for him. Now, they haven't had a ton of home games and the conditions haven't been great there. So I'm more willing to make allowances for Story than I am Semien.
You take Story. You would in that deal.
I would take Story in that deal pretty quickly, actually. Marcus Semien for Jesus Sanchez on the Marlins.
Oh, that is a big sell low. Although I like Jesus Sanchez a lot. One problem with Jesus Sanchez is he's a lefty bat, and I think there are some platoon concerns there. Like, he hasn't been able to hit lefties this season at all. He's a 300 right. OPS against them. It's not obviously a big sample size yet. I'll stick with Semien over Sanchez.
Okay. I think it's pretty close. I like Sanchez. Me too. I think he's struggled a little bit lately. You know, he got off to a pretty nice start, at least on that road trip in Anaheim, really started to take off. And I want a lot of Jesus Sanchez in my life, but, I think in a keeper league, I almost certainly do that.
Oh, easily, yeah. I do think that Semien could stink this year, but still steal you a dozen bases, and that in a roto league, that has to still be part of the puzzle.
Marcus Semien for Jesse Winker, another guy off to a terrible start.
Yeah, I'm an ever Winker guy, so
okay.
So I'm out on that one.
Easy decision for you there. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. Oh,
that's a fun one because Gurriel is off to a decent start. I'm just
two homers, 10 RBI, 12.
He's doing what he usually does.
Yep.
He's doing what he usually does.
He has a stolen base. He's hitting .287.
Which is basically in line with his career average. He's
and you know, this is a fun team to hit, fun lineup he's hitting in.
Yeah. Okay, now we're in the ballpark. So I feel like my plan of attack would be like I would ask for Gurriel. And then it's like someone who intrigued me, like Gurriel and someone lesser, but someone who I was kind of intrigued by, just like a low, it might be a pitcher or something like that, that I try to get thrown into the deal. Someone who I kind of like.
We're looking at, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I just to tell people we're looking at trades done today on Yahoo straight up. You know, we don't know in some cases if there's a salary component. So it gives us some, you know, there might be some cases there in keeper leagues or something of that nature that, you know, and shed some light on the deal.
I'll give you one right now. How about for Seiya Suzuki?
Yeah, you're looking at the same page I am. I just got to that. Springer and Suzuki both were very intriguing. I take both Springer and Suzuki over Semien at this point in time.
Yes.
You've really got me convinced that Semien's not coming back to much of anything.
I think Suzuki's kind of like in the sweet spot for me where like Lourdes Gurriel's fine. Like I think of him, he probably got drafted a little later than Suzuki, and there's probably a little more just general enthusiasm or upside with Suzuki. I think we kind of know what Lourdes Gurriel is at this point. Someone like Suzuki though, not that like at that point in a league, you're probably offering like your fourth round pick for someone else's like 10th round pick, or maybe if it's a smaller league, your fifth round pick for their 12th round pick at the end of April. I feel like that's the kind of deal you can make where someone just on the name value of Semien and you're like, come on, this guy was third in AL MVP voting last year. He could turn it around any day. And maybe you can get someone like that for him. And I see just seeing some other names in here. Like if you wanted to go hitting for pitching, like, and these are not one for ones on the list, but like, would you trade him for someone like Joe Ryan, a pitcher who's, or Tyler McGill, like a pitcher who's intriguing and off to a good start? I can see a one-on-one for him for Shane McClanahan.
Well, I see an Alcantara one, which snap call.
That's easy one. Yeah.
I think I would take McClanahan for Semien too, if I need the pitching. George Springer. I mean, that's like a no brainer, easy one. Same with Matt Olson. I mean, I gotta wonder if the people that traded away those players for Semien were eating paste, because those are just bad trades.
Yeah, there's so many Yahoo leagues that I must admit, like you never know with some of the trades, like what's going on there. But I think the sweet spot is probably trading down like five or six rounds. Like, okay, so how about that? And this is always the way to solve it is if we were drafting again today for the rest of the season, where would Marcus Semien go? And if I had to guess, let's say like about pick 120. Does that make sense?
I was going to say 150. It makes sense. It might be a neighborhood over from each other, but we don't have to take a bus to get there. We can ride our bike to the next neighborhood down that way.
So if you offer him around the league, and again, my advice is do not put it on the message board. That makes you sound desperate. So instead, put a little more legwork in and offer him around the league for a series of guys who were maybe drafted in the 120 to 150 range. And some people write you back and be like, LOL, I don't want anything to do with Semien. And then you cross them off the list. But someone will write you back and say, oh, okay, I'm interested, even if they don't take the deal. And maybe you can work something out with them.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so Fred, my most rostered player on the NFBC platform is another slumper, Dylan Carlson. He's batting ninth today. He had, I think we're still waiting for his first homer of the year. He has one stolen base. I have him in seven NFBC leagues. That's like 58% of my NFBC platform leagues. That includes Yogurt, includes Scarf, includes Raz Slam. So, you know, it's all on their commission service. So that, but still, I was big on Dylan Carlson. I got him around the 10th round in a 15-teamer regularly. Got him in mixed labor too. So non-NFBC platforms, I also have him. He is definitely my problem. What do you do about Dylan Carlson?
What do you think the Cardinals are going to do about Dylan Carlson? Because I think that's got to be part of the plan. Like, do you think there's any chance he could go to the minors?
I think there's a chance.
Yeah.
I mean, he's young enough.
Yeah. And like, how long do you let him just keep hitting under 200 and playing this poorly? Like, it's not like he's just hitting under, like, his XBA is 186. So
yeah,
Statcast doesn't even think he deserves a better fate. Now, he's dropped his strikeout rate this year. He's not walking. He's just similar to Semien in that his quality of contact is just really, really low. He has no barrels, none this season.
Yeah. He and Randy Arozarena can trade notes.
Yeah. Yes. Randy Arozarena is someone who I don't have any, and I'm not victory lapping on him at all, but I have no shares on him. His XBA last year was really low. I think it was 220. And that kind of gave me a reason for some pause this year.
Yeah.
And so far he's hitting 209 and things haven't gone very well, but Statcast said he was someone who overachieved last year. So that at least made me think twice about him.
Yeah. Scott Jenstad was off of him too, I think for similar reasons. And
so with Carlson, could he be a drop in some 12 team leagues?
Could be. You're probably since I'm so heavily invested in Carlson, you're probably asking the wrong guy, because I'm going to be excruciatingly patient because, hey, man, that's a lot of work having to cut him in a lot of leagues. That's mechanically, it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And I think last year he had a slow stretch and then came on strong. That makes me want to, and plus you look at his age, that makes me think that something good is coming. And the real disaster would be if I cut him, someone else swoops in, picks him up, and he turns out to be really good and all's well. And then it's on somebody else's roster too. So that would be the real disaster for me. So I'll probably be stubborn with him.
Do you have him benched everywhere?
No, I do not have him benched.
Okay.
I've been rolling. I'm stashing him in my active lineup. Because let's face it, in a lot of these leagues, I don't have bench spots to give. I mean, you mentioned right before we started, everybody's day-to-day right now. It's really hard making lineup decisions when you got guys that are going on the unnamed, the Voldemort IL, it's COVID, but we can't say it's COVID. Mm-hmm. That I think it was Vlad that was making that point on Twitter today.
It wasn't ridiculous. Vlad,
I apologize. Yeah. It's like, come on, we know it's COVID. Stop. I mean, the Reds today, Joey Votto goes on the IL. Hey, I made it 36 minutes without mentioning the Reds. Hey, that's a new record for me. But he went on the COVID IL today, and the Reds said he didn't test positive. He has some symptoms. They're allowed to put him on there, so they did. Now they have an extra roster spot.
Yeah, to use for, I'm not really sure what, but
you said that, not me.
Yeah, I did.
Say, I'm positive today. Happy guys.
Just reporting on Joey Votto going on the COVID IL is just you bringing the news. It's not you complaining about the Reds. With Carlson, I know what you mean. I think that would be the cause for at some point cutting him would be that you need in a 12 team would be that like you need someone in that spot who you actually are willing to use. I think it might be a scenario where it just kind of goes league to league with you, where if you have a league where you've got a bunch of injuries and you kind of need that roster spot and you see someone on waivers you like, then maybe you're open to cutting him. I don't think you've gotten to that point just by what you've said in the last couple minutes. I don't think you're at the point where you're really open to cutting him at all. You'd rather just leave him in your lineup and see what happens. The easiest thing for you would be if the Cardinals just sent him down and then they'd make the decision for you. I think then you'd have to cut him.
Yeah.
Maybe in a 15, you could hang on to him if you thought they were sending him down for a couple weeks.
Yeah. I'm going to show you a question, but before I do that, I'm going to tell you the answer is it depends. Here's the question. How many at-bats do you give an underperformer in a head-to-head categorical league? 100, 150, 200 before you drop them? Obviously, it depends because it depends on the player, right?
Yeah.
What their established track record is, how much that what they've done so far, who their competition is, all these sort of factors.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, where you drafted them, how much you have invested in them, all that stuff matters. Like Whit Merrifield, someone who's underperformed a ton so far this year.
Yes, he has.
That being said, like and then it also, like, you have to look a little deeper than the actual underperformance, right? Because, like, for example, with Whit Merrifield, I just was looking at him earlier today. His XBA is like right in line with previous seasons. So, like, are you gonna drop him? His XBA says he should be hitting like 250, and he can still run. So, I feel like you have to wait it out. Someone else, where it's like Dylan Carlson, where the advanced stats are saying that, you know, that he's a mess right now, that he's not making good contact. I'll give you a great example of why you hang on to the really good ones. Remember Jose Ramirez in 2019?
Yeah. There was the awful, awful 2.5 months.
Yeah.
His wife had a kid, and after that, he caught fire. It was the summer of Jose.
Yeah.
And he got hurt at the end. And that
first half OPS was 652. And second half, and this was the year everyone was hitting. And second half OPS was 1105.
Yeah.
So, that's if it's a really good player. And this is why I said with Simeon, like, I feel like you just, because Simeon's on a different level than someone like Dylan Carlson. Like, I feel like with someone like Simeon, you can't drop him. You can drop Dylan Carlson. Now, a head to head categories league, head to head league depends on the league size, but it's going to be more shallow. So you can go further than Dylan Carlson and still cut people. But the guys at the very top, like Story, Simeon, right? Like Merrifield.
Yeah.
I feel like you have to hold on to them. They're not going to do what Jose Ramirez did in 2019, but there's just so much bounce back potential. That's why they were drafted so high.
But I'll say this. You mentioned Statcast for Carlson and Rosarena. Merrifield's never been a great Statcast guy either. The quality of his contact's never been that great. And it's even down this year from last year. Last year, he had a 3.5% barrel percentage, down to 2.7. In other words, he's had two barrels so far this year. Average exit velocity is 86.8. His max exit velocity so far is 104. Even that's below what his tops last year and last ever years, actually. So, you know, WOBA, which is tries to incorporate everything, is at 183. He's been flat out. He's earned his bad numbers so far.
Basically. But that's his WOBA. Like, that's not his ex-WOBA. Like, his ex-WOBA is 306, which actually a little better than his ex-WOBA.
Yeah, that's true. Good point.
301. So if you look at his expected stats, like from this year, like,
although,
yeah, it's a 260. Well, it's a 261 average. Last year's expected stat was a 263. He's had other years with a 262, a couple in the 270s, and his ex-WOBA was 306. That's a little down. Basically, his dips are mostly probably could be accounted for by the baseball. Like little dips could be accounted for by the baseball. Like his average exit velocity is almost identical to last season.
So you're basically saying if the baseball comes back to being juiced, then he's better. But isn't like the ex-WOBA based on old baseballs and what you'd expect? Baseballs,
probably. Yep. Yep. So, but him having an ex-WOBA then the same as last season means he's probably. So if Whit Merrifield's a little bit worse this year, but everybody else is worse, then he's really the same, right? As long as he steals his bases, then he's really the same. So I don't know. Anyways, I think some of the guys, when you're looking at them at their Statcast numbers, their X stats, like their XBA, their XWOBA, are like way, way lower than last year. And that's something that we see with guys like Simeon and Carlson. So I was actually a little encouraged by Merrifield's that his aren't way lower. I'm not expecting many barrels from Merrifield. I do worry about his power because I feel like he was always a wall scraper with his home runs. So,
he is.
Yeah. So maybe he's someone who would like, with this ball, like, is it going to hit 5 home runs this year? I don't know, but he doesn't need to hit a lot for me to get most of my value back. He just needs to hit 250 or 260 and steal his bases.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I can see that.
Yeah. And not get bumped down to ninth or eighth in the lineup, before this all gets sorted out. So, but I think that you're right. You said at the beginning about the question that it depends. It definitely depends how what the player's ceiling is.
For sure.
Yeah.
Before we move on to closer madness, any other slumpers you want to talk about?
Well, I mentioned, and I don't have any shares, but one thing that we never talk about, well, I don't say people never talk about, but I don't hear discussed much is everybody talks about all these terrible hitters. Mm-hmm. The guys who are really killing you right now are the terrible pitchers, because they're pitching terribly while some other guy's using Bruce Zimmerman and getting really good stats. You know, Dylan Carlson's killing you, but then some other guy on my, but then Trevor Story's killing me, or Whit Merrifield's killing me. So like, we're all getting burned by a bunch of hitters right now. Yeah, there are people who all their pitchers are pitching well, or pretty much all their pitchers are pitching well. Then there's guys who have Charlie Morton, who, you know, went into today's start with a 7 ERA and came out of it with a 6.85 ERA.
Yeah. So. When Yu Darvish gets bombed in his second start,
yes,
that has a disproportionate impact.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Those are the players who are really killing your teams right now, because you can't afford, not when other teams are having so much pitching success. Like, and Charlie Morton, like, his strikeout rate's down. His strikeout to walk rate's almost one to one right now. So
yeah,
he is someone who came off a broken leg right at the end of the season. He's an older player. Like, I, again, I don't have any shares, so maybe this is just kind of all my concerns from draft season kind of being realized. But yeah, he's off to a poor start, and I'm worried.
Yeah, I would be worried too. And I think, you know, I just don't think he ever is fully back from that fractured fibula that he suffered during the World Series. And at age 38, you know, when our it takes longer for older people to recover. I'm living proof. I'm just saying, you know, we as players age, the recovery time is longer, and recover to what is the other question too. Yep. I mean, this is a guy that was talking about retirement 2 years ago, and so he put in the hard work to get back this year. But you know, it's just something to watch for there, that to see if, you know, if he's ever going to come back. I think he's a bench, not a cut.
Yep.
But I get it when people want to do that.
Yes. And it hurts to bench someone who you drafted as your number two or three starter, mm-hmm. like, and to be benching them in early May, you know, in a season that started late. But I mean, if you look at what's going on with him right now, like, his strikeout rate's way down. So he's just struggling to put hitters away. And then because of that, he's walking more hitters. So he can't put hitters away. As he's trying to put them away, he's missing the strike zone sometimes. He's had three or more walks in all of his last four starts. He's like, it's easy to see what's going wrong. It's hard to fix it overnight.
Meanwhile, the Michael Wacha has thrown five shutout innings against the Angels. You know, that's,
yes,
it's just,
that's why Charlie Morton's killing you, because someone else is using Michael Wacha, who they just grabbed off waivers because they were desperate, and he's outperforming Charlie Morton by a wide margin.
Yep. Big first start in his two-step this week, going against an Angels team that's actually pretty good too. You'd expect them to be able, although the Angels have been shut out in their last 14 innings. Dylan Cease had a lot to do with that, but now it's Wacha. Wacha's next start is against the White Sox, against Dylan Cease, to bring everything full circle there. But just thought that was noteworthy there. So yeah, fun times. We had a lot of definition in closers, or at least we had a lot of closer news over the last 24 hours. Starting with the Cardinals. Sunday, Ryan Helsley was awesome. Threw two innings, hit 103, was the subject of fab bidding. Then yesterday, Giovanni Gallegos got the save. I will say this. Helsley threw two innings. Of course, someone else was going to get the save. Yep. And it should be Gallegos. Gallegos, that was his first outing in a week. You know, they passed over him. And my argument with that is, why take Helsley out on Sunday when he looked that good in his first inning at work?
Yeah, and it's not only Gallegos' first outing in a week. It was his first outing since he got bombed a week ago, right? Two-thirds of an inning, four
that
runs.
Was the weird game against the Mets. Bombed is overstating the case. Remember, the runs were earned despite Arenado getting an error. And then two more runs scored when Gallegos was slow to cover first and got beat down the line by Dominic Smith. Now that's on Gallegos, and he earned all that stuff.
Yeah.
But the first two earned runs were a little shaky. He didn't really get bombed. He was shaky, but nonetheless, and he gave up a run against the Reds in his outing prior to that too. So he was a little off. He was throwing his fastball less often. And sometimes we talk about that being a good thing. I rarely think it's a good thing when you're talking about a closer, though.
Right. We both think Gallegos, we both still think Gallegos is a really good pitcher, right?
Yep.
And we both still think Gallegos will lead the Cardinals in saves this year?
Yes. Yes, I do, but with less conviction than before.
Right. Maybe it's a scenario where the Cardinals as a team produce 40 saves and Gallegos gets 28 of them, 26 yeah. of them, and guys like Helsley get 5 of them.
Yeah, it might even be like 25 and 10 and somebody else 5.
Right.
But or,
right.
You know,
yeah.
But
yeah. Yeah.
I noticed that you didn't come back at me with the Cronenworth for Gallegos offer this week. I know we talked about maybe revisiting that. Neither of us did. But yeah, I also was very busy this weekend. So that
I was barely home all weekend and just getting that closing time article written with Simeon and getting my fab bids and lineups done. That consumed all my time. There was no right. diving into the trade market on Sunday night this time.
No, no.
Yeah.
I will be available this week if you want to talk trade, okay. if you want to talk shop.
Sounds good.
We'll see if I need to do that, if you need to do that. So we'll find out. We can see and find out yep. about that. I thought the big the development of yesterday, though, was with Minnesota. Juan Dron got the save for the Twins and looked fantastic in doing so, albeit against the Orioles, but still. Pagan pitched the 8th. That was the critical part. It wasn't like Pagan was unavailable. They had him pitch the 8th. Dron came in, shut the door in the 9th, got his first save. I think that might be the first of many.
Yeah, like there's absolutely no comparison in these two pitchers, right? Like Dron yeah. is way better than mm-hmm. Emilio Pagan as a pitcher. I could see this being another scenario, though, where like I don't think the Twins really want to go full-time closer. Like, I don't think that's where they want, like, the direction they really want to go in. I could see Dron and other guys. I could see Dron getting the most saves, but them kind of sharing the role. And Dron comes in for some of the saves where it's the heart of the lineup or a one-run game. But then sometimes some guys like Pagan come in when it's a three-run game and batter 6, 7, 8 are coming up. Like, I could see that kind of scenario where they stay flexible with right. Dron. He's a really young pitcher. I don't know. Like, they could go the, like, what the Guardians / Indians at the time did last year with Emmanuel Clase and kind of turned the job over to a really young pitcher. But I don't know. I don't think I'm there yet. But I'm really interested in Dron.
I think he could end up with 30 saves. Okay. I wish I had him.
Emmanuel Clase.
I screwed up on Sunday night in the XFL where we have once a month supplemental moves. I could have taken him. I didn't. He went one pick after me. A pick like 19 in this supplemental draft. Okay. Could have had him. And I think he's a guy that could close for a very long time too. I think he's going to be one of those guys. I think Clase is actually a very apt comparison, and I wish I had him.
Yeah, you could very well be right. Like he's seemed at least so far, he's by far the best pitcher in that bullpen. If they want to yeah. go the traditional closer route, he's their guy. I don't think Pagan can do it successfully, but they could go that route, like I mentioned, where. You know, he gets half the saves. Other guys get split up kind of half the saves. Mm-hmm. He gets the toughest ones. You know, some games he pitches the 8th inning because Judge and Stanton are coming up or something like that. And someone else gets the 9th. Yeah. But you're right. They could go the Class A. He's someone who, like you said, like if you don't have him, little regret right now.
I have lots of regret about not having any Juan Dron. So, yeah. All right. In that Twins game, Chris Paddock got the start, got the win. Again, I'm very hesitant to say Chris Paddock is back, given how every pitcher is good. Yeah. Michael Wach is good all of a sudden again. I can't buy it yet. Jake Odorizzi's good again. I don't, you know, he's good right now. But at the same time, yeah, still exactly the type of pitcher you should be rostering. And if you have daily moves and maxing out innings using that, I mean, if, you know, yeah, and he's probably, that might be too high of a target. Might be rostered higher than that. But point is, I don't trust him in the long run, but I trust him now. If that makes sense.
Yep. I think that does make sense. I mean, right now with Paddock, he's not walking anyone. That's been a huge, I guess he's always been a really good control pitcher. He's been even better at it this year. His strikeout rates like down on his K per nine, but his strikeout percentage is pretty similar. He's just limiting his base runners. He's always been a guy who doesn't walk many guys. So far, he hasn't given up any home runs, and that's always been an issue for him. Maybe this ball will be perfect for him. right? Like guys who gave up a lot of home runs, maybe this ball will be perfect for them.
Exactly. Paddock, his next start is against Oakland. So
perfect.
Full steam ahead. I mean, we want that all the time, every day. After that, a home start against Cleveland. I'll take Cleveland. We talked about last week. They're better than people realize, but I still am not afraid of them.
Yeah, I agree. I there's not many offenses I'm afraid of right now.
Yeah. So we'll watch and see with that one there, and then we'll go from there. But all right, so Chris Paddock is another guy to talk about there. Okay, more closer situations. Ryan Pressly starting a rehab assignment today. AAA Round Rock. I'm assuming that we'll see him by the weekend.
Yep.
But until then, Rafael Montero picked up another save yesterday.
Yeah, a good example of I could see. I think that's fluid. I think when Dusty said that they'll just mix and match in the ninth inning.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think he kind of meant that. Montero's pitched really well this year, 15-3 strikeout to walk in 10 and a third innings. I think this is a good example of maybe not jumping on the presumed next man up when the manager doesn't give him an endorsement thing with Hector Neris. Like some people dip their toe in for Hector Neris. Like if you bought Hector Neris in an NFBC Fab League for 40 or 50 bucks, sure. Like I get it. It makes sense going after someone hoping that maybe Presley's out 2 weeks and he gets three or four saves. But right. The people who bid triple digits thinking he was for sure the guy, and some people did do that, or around $100 thinking he was for sure the guy. Like Dusty told you, he wasn't going to use a guy. He said that right away. Neris has no save chances still this year. So see, and he's still pitching really well. So it's not like, he's messed up his own chances by getting blown up in some game. Like he's given up one run all season.
He went for 118. In one of my mains. Wow. I got Josh Stallmont. I got one save out of that, and now we're benching him again. Haven't quite cut him yet, but I got him for 73, which isn't that much better. Meanwhile, I see in between that is there sits Taylor Ward for 91. I'm like, that's who I should have been going after, but that's neither here nor there. But
yeah, it's easy in hindsight, but you never – Taylor Ward, you just didn't know. He could have gone 0 for 4 the next four games and ended up back on the bench, but
yeah.
He's worked out. But I think it is a good sign that, like, nowadays the way teams manage their bullpens, even if a closer like Pressly goes down, it doesn't mean that if they're telling you they're not going to another closer, then maybe you should believe them.
Right.
And Fish, like some people did add Montero for 10 bucks and got a save out of it.
Yeah. I'll say this. Ryan Roof called Montero. He also called Helsley in his last week in his closer encounters article. I had him on the Thursday podcast. In fact, he even said, I hope Helsley doesn't get a save before Fab so I can get him cheaply. Unfortunately, Helsley had a two-inning dominant save on Sunday and was like the highlighted guy. But that scuttled that plan, at least the cheap part. He still might have gotten him. Mm-hmm. Jorge Lopez, this isn't anything new, but he's been the closer all year for Baltimore. He's throwing harder. And he's like pretty clearly the guy in Baltimore. Would you trade for him in a trade league if you needed saves?
If he was cheap, like I wouldn't trade a lot for him. He's definitely throwing harder. He's definitely their guy. They're definitely not going to win a ton of games. If he was cheap, I guess I would trade for him. Because the thing is, if you need to trade for a closer, how many guys are there for you to trade for? Would you trade for Duran before you would trade for Jorge Lopez?
Yes.
Even though Duran, you have no idea if he's the closer. Would you trade for Helsley before you would trade for Jorge Lopez?
No, because Gallegos is a clear alternative.
Yeah.
I'll tell you some of the trades. Using Yahoo.
Yeah.
He's fetched some pretty decent value in some cases and some low balls in others. Very wild range. Matt Chapman, Max Muncy, those are pretty good guys to get for.
I would not be trading those guys for Jorge Lopez.
Yusei Kikuchi, that's more in the range
that's
I thought
good.
He'd go for.
That's fair. I would do that if I needed a closer.
Yeah, in fact, Zach Greinke, man, that's fool's gold.
100%. I would make that deal. In a heartbeat. So I think if you needed a closer, how about this? Would you rather trade for Mark Melancon or Jorge Lopez?
Probably Melancon, even though Melancon's on the COVID IR right now. But
yeah,
I mean, I don't like Melanson. Don't have him. I have him in one league, I think, maybe. But that was only before, I think I got him before he signed with Arizona. So I got him really late. I don't know. I think I mean, Arizona's terrible too. No, I'm going to still go Melanson over Lopez, I think, even though I think I do kind of buy into Lopez being a better pitcher right now, but the team context scares me too much in Baltimore.
I think we're down around, I think that's the level that we're at though, is like these closers, low end guys who have the job, like Lopez and Melanson. And then you can compare them to good guys who might have the job, like Duran. I guess if you need the lock in saves, maybe you trade for, you needed to, I guess you trade for Lopez. I thought of someone else I thought of was Camilo Duvall, who's kind of in the forefront, I guess, of a committee.
I think he's the guy now.
Maybe. I don't know.
This is a guy. This is, maybe it's just my pessimism kicking in as a person that has took McGee over Duvall every single time. If I took either of them, but I don't, McGee's last outing was bad. Duvall's been pretty good lately. I might have missed one opportunity there but I think Duvall's been really solid lately, right?
Yep, he's been solid. He gave up 3 runs in his first appearance of the season and has not given up a run yet. They just haven't really had save chances lately.
Right.
So, like, not really his fault. You would take Duvall then over Lopez?
Yes. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
How about over Duran?
I think so, because I just think the Giants are so good.
Yeah.
And they have such, you know, Todd Zola always talks about how starting pitching correlates to a lot of save chances. And even though they haven't had a lot of them lately, they're going to have a lot of them over the long run, I think. Duvall's wildness is the only thing that bothers me a little bit there. Whip is going to be a little bit higher, but even that is, he's tamped down a little bit lately. So yeah, I think I'd go Duvall over Duran, but I think that's the neighborhood we're shopping in though.
I'll throw someone else in here because he's topical today, because he just came back from the COVID IL, Lou Trevino. Where are you going to put him? Would you rather have Lou Trevino, who I'm assuming goes back to being the A's closer, but I can't guarantee it.
I can't assume that.
I don't know. He was their closer before he went on the COVID IL.
I would prefer Lopez.
Okay.
Let alone Duran, and certainly Duvall and Duran over Trevino.
Yeah. So Duvall, Duran, Lopez, Melanson too. Then you take all those guys over Trevino.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. Would you take Gallegos over every name we've talked about?
No. I think I'd put him in the same level as Duvall. No.
Okay.
I think I think if I had one, I wouldn't trade him for the other. I think I would just leave well enough alone. Maybe
trade him for Duran.
No, I mean, I have Duran below Duvall. So.
I see. Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've got them all in the same tier. I was more thinking about it, not as them being traded for each other, but more if you were going to go out and look for, like, if you were going to take your player.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And go out and look for a closer.
I think Gallegos versus Duvall is actually pretty close.
Yeah.
Because Gallegos is going to have better ratios. I don't think he walks as many guys.
Yeah.
But Duvall just has that high ceiling too. And, and McGee is shown to be a little flawed comparatively. You know, he's not as much competition as Helsley is to Gallegos right now.
Yep. Yep. That's true. Yep. You're right. Cause Helsley's pitching great right now.
Yeah. Duvall is less certain on his skills.
That's true. Yes. And I will also say the Cardinals new manager, like, we don't really know exactly how their bullpen management is going to go. We kind of have a bit of a feel for the Giants, where we know that Kapler will mess around with his bullpen, but he also will settle in on a closer sometimes.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, like, he settled in on McGee basically for a pretty long time last season.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to hit up before we go?
I'm not sure. Give me an Alek Manoah update.
Up 1-0. They're in the sixth. He just gave up a hit, I think, which
just jinxed him.
Yeah, he did it before you asked, so. But
okay,
5 1/3, 7 Ks, 2 hits, 1 walk. We like that. 1-0.
Okay, I'll give you one quick topic then. If I want to hit up one thing before we go, I'm interested in your opinion on this. Quick answer, I guess, on a topic we could talk about for a long time. But the Orioles are down at home. We know about the ballpark changes. Are you running from all these guys? Like, you have some Trey Mancini, I believe. Am I right on that?
I have them in labor. Yep.
Okay. Okay. Maybe that's why I thought about it. Are you running from these guys, or are you buying low on some of them? Like Austin Hayes, Ryan Mountcastle, Cedric Mullins, they're all down. Their power numbers are all down. These guys are all down. And the Orioles as a team are hitting way worse so far this year at home than they are on the road. Some of that is just matchups and pitches.
I believe the ballpark change is real. I mean, that was, we saw all along. It was not just a tiny little adjustment. They moved the fences considerably back and higher too.
Did we not downgrade these guys far enough?
I think maybe. I mean, I thought we moved them down far enough, but Mullins isn't even really contributing the way we'd like him to either.
Nope.
Maybe. But that's the part where the ball kind of kicks in too, though, because he's lefty. Shouldn't hurt him as much. But he's got two homers. He's in .222. It's all gross. Maybe we didn't. Jury's still out. I mean, usually, and Todd always likes to say, you get 3 years before any sort of ballpark data is real. We've had 3 weeks. So
for sure.
3.5 weeks.
Yeah. Definitely something to keep an eye on with them, though.
Yeah. And Mullins could have been a fluke. I don't think he was completely a fluke, but... He certainly is. The expect him to repeat was also probably asking a lot, too.
Yeah, I mean, no one expected, 30-30 again. Like, if we were hoping for 20 and 25 or something like that. And the two homers so far is disappointing. But it's not, if you're only expecting 20, then it's not too far off the pace, at least.
Yeah, I think he's like, he might go 15-30, which I'd take, you know. But if it's 10-10, well, then I'm going to be really disappointed.
Yeah, or if it's 15-20 with a .240 batting average. He's still in your lineup at that point, but
20 stolen bases still plays.
It sure does.
We talk about how stolen bases are up. They're barely up. It's not like teams are running wild. Let's be clear. We're not talking Whitey Herzog and the Cardinals here.
Yeah.
We're talking points. It was 0.45 stolen bases per team per game last year. It's 0.47 now. And caught ceilings are up a little bit too. But it's not like teams are running wild by any stretch of the imagination. So 20 stolen bases definitely plays. You want to get something with it there is the point. And it's especially if you played that sweet third round play, a price for it there. That's the killer. All right, that's going to close it for today. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Great feedback. Thanks for everybody chiming in on the forum and on Twitter. We really do appreciate it. And, of course, listening to us generally speaking, we'd appreciate it even more if you would subscribe to the whether it's here on YouTube, click that like button, or subscribe wherever you access your podcast. We really do appreciate it there. Thanks for listening, everybody. Take care.